chatting it up with you again Thursday style, June 13th, 2024 on Connecticut Today. I open the show with my thoughts on a career criminal who allegedly killed a senior citizen in a recent car accident and wondered, how is this guy still on the street? You'll be shocked when you hear the numbers behind this. Quinnipiac University Professor Angela Matty dropped by the show once again to talk about a U.S. Supreme Court ruling on the availability of an abortion-inducing medication. And finally, our pal Lenny Grimaldi stopped by from onlyinbridgeport.com. And you know, I really hate to start the show like this, but you know, a lot of times when I see a story like this, I feel I've got to do it off of the top of the show. And we'll talk about it and get your calls at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And the question and the story, I'm going to read excerpts of to you from the Hartford Current, asks a simple question. Well, it asks two questions, actually. Number one, are we serious when it comes about crime, and especially with habitual criminals? And then it's the question I usually segue into here, is that at what point, you know, people obviously are okay with life sentences if you kill someone. Well, murder, I don't want the death penalty, but a life sentence is okay. But proportionally, let's say somebody doesn't actually kill someone, but there are a lot of other individual crimes and sentences and punishments and convictions to which we sit and we ask, when is this person, when does a person like this, even if they did not kill someone and with any sort of malicious intent, when do certain people forfeit their ability or forfeit their good fortune as humans, forfeit their ability to walk among us, their privilege, that's the word. When do they forfeit their privilege to walk among us? What am I talking about? Well, let's go here. The Hartford Current. Listen to this, and of course, we'll take your calls at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. But when does a person forfeit their privilege to be able to walk among us? From the Hartford Current, the man and I'm reading this because I know everybody is into politics and everything, and oh, Trump's going to make us a Third Reich and Biden's going to hand us to China, whatever. No, there are certain things that are even closer to us that we should be worried about. The man suspected of. Now, I want you to listen to this and listen to this carefully, because this will you will be gnashing your teeth when you hear this. The man suspected of causing and then running away from a car crash that killed a 96-year-old woman Sunday has at least one dozen prior convictions, 10 criminal cases pending against him, and was out of jail at the time of the crash because after being arrested 6 times since January, he had posted at least $275,000 in surety bonds. I'm going to read that again before we get to the specifics of the case. I'm going to read this again. I want you to listen to this very carefully. The man suspected of causing and then running away from a car crash that killed a 96-year-old woman Sunday has at least a dozen prior criminal convictions, not cases, convictions, 10 criminal cases pending against him, and was out of jail because after being arrested 6 times since January, he posted at least $275,000 in surety bonds. State police charged Franklin B. Post with 7 new crimes after the collision Sunday in Griswold that took the life of Charlotte DeGrotto of Branford, including fleeing the scene of a fatal auto accident. A trooper found Post 35 of Basra. The guy's 35 years old. He's had a dozen priors and 10 criminal cases pending. This guy should be walking among us? This guy shouldn't be in a padded rubber room somewhere? They found him hiding in the woods near Jewett City with a bag of fentanyl pills and $4,700 in cash. Now, you can sit here and say, well, that's horrible. Yeah. Why is he out? Well, we know why he's out, because it's our justice system and society that doesn't say, that's it, pal, we'll see you in 50 years. You're in a rubber room with a straitjacket on, and you're going to get fed through a straw. A dozen prior convictions, 10 cases pending, and out of jail at the time of the crash because after being arrested 6 times since January, he posted enough bond. That's not a human being. I don't know what that is. You can't say animal because an animal doesn't do that to its own kind. Witnesses told state police that an Audi driven by Post and carrying two other men flew through a four-way stop at the rural intersection of Taylor Hill and Oakville Roads in Griswold at an estimated 60 miles an hour. It then smashed into an SUV in which DeGrotto was a passenger. She was coming home from a shower with relatives. Another driver awaiting his turn to move through the intersection managed to pull out his cell phone and record a video clip of the man police believe to be Post bailing out of the Audi and limping away with his passengers. The cell phone video, along with a surveillance camera video from a nearby restaurant, left little doubt among the Eastern Connecticut troopers arriving on the scene that they were looking for Post. It continues, quote, multiple troopers on the scene, having been familiar with Franklin B. Post, were able to immediately recognize him through the video. That's what the state police say. All right, now, here's the part that's going to make your eyeballs pop out of your head even more. State court records show that as a result of all his convictions in 10 criminal cases in Connecticut, Post served 3 prison sentences since 2016, one of 18 months, one of a year, and a third of 90 days. He was convicted of crimes such as breach of peace, resisting arrest, engaging police in pursuits, narcotics possession, larceny, burglary, motor vehicle offenses. He was repeatedly found to have violated the terms of his probation. During the same period, by the way, he was arrested in Florida and accused of assault. It appears from Connecticut records that Post was being arrested again earlier this year, even before finishing his latest prison sentence. He was released under a, here we go, folks, here it is. You knew the money shot was coming. Here it is. He was released under a transitional supervision program, which required him to live with his mother, who is his sponsor. During his various other encounters with authorities, Post has been released from custody under a variety of circumstances early on, and when charged with minor offenses, he's been released on relatively low unsecured bonds or promises to appear in court, promises the records show he often ignored. But after the latest prison release, during the weeks leading to the fatal collision, the records show increasingly larger bonds were imposed. That means he was required to pay a bondsman as much as 10% of the bond in order to be released. Post's transitional supervision ended on February 6th. Court records show he'd been charged a month earlier on January 17th with, among other things, running a stop sign, engaging police in a pursuit, and resisting arrest. He posted a $5,000 surety bond and was released. I could go on. Folks, I haven't even read half of this story. I haven't even read half of this story. And you know what the problem is here? And I've talked to people in the General Assembly about this. In Connecticut, you must set a bond. As it has been explained to me by legal professionals and people I know in the General Assembly, I believe in Connecticut, because we're so cutting edge, we don't allow judges, I believe, to basically say you're being held without bond, as was explained to me. So here we have, and maybe if we make that change, well, it's too bad for this woman now, but we have a 96-year-old woman who is dead after allegedly a guy with at least a dozen, not one, two, or three, at least a dozen prior criminal convictions, 10 criminal cases pending against him, and being out of jail at the time of the crash simply because he was able to buy his freedom. The woman is dead. I don't want to hear anything about anybody in either political party saying, oh, crime is down. You know who crime is down for? Crime is down for people who aren't the victim of crime. If any General Assembly member or anybody in the administration were to go to the relatives or friends of this woman, this 96-year-old woman who was just minding her business with family members on the way back from a shower, and say, hey, you know what? Crime is down. Do you realize how far that person would be thrown out the window of that home? But remember, crime is down. But again, you know, God forbid we have the ability in this state to hold people basically against their will. I'm sorry, I know what people are saying, but explain this to me. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. How is it that a guy with a dozen prior criminal convictions, 10 pending cases at the time of this accident that killed this woman, how was this guy out in the street? How was this guy in the street? If and here's the thing. If somebody posts video of somebody abusing a puppy, it's the lead story on Channel 8, Channel 30, Fox 61, NBC, Connecticut. Oh, no, it's a puppy. But this guy has a dozen prior convictions, 10 criminal cases, and the sick laws in this state allow him to post bond. Please explain this. Why do we go nuts if somebody, you know, kicks a puppy, which I wouldn't do? Why is that the lead story on the news? But yet you have a guy who allegedly kills a 96-year-old woman, and the guy's been a criminal since what, year one? I don't get it. We are so full of crap on stuff. It's frightening. Return visit here from Professor Angela Matty. Professor Matty, a distinguished faculty member at Quinnipiac. She specializes in health law, ethics, and policy with an extensive experience in the legal aspects of healthcare, patient rights, and bioethics. And Professor Matty, it's Paul here again. Good afternoon. How are you? Good to have you back.
Well, it's my pleasure to be back. Thank you for having us. We appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, so let's get into what the Supreme Court said today. Now, peep, now, rarely do we see 9-0, Professor Matty, on any issue set aside this. But I think people should understand and explain this to us. This really wasn't a judgment on mifepristone per se. They made this on standing, correct?
That's absolutely right. So, you know, the court was unanimous because they didn't decide any specific legality related to the distribution of mifepristone, What they decided was whether or not the plaintiffs, and in this case, the people bringing the suit, which are the Christian Legal Group Alliance Defense, Defending Freedom Association, whether or not they could bring it to the Supreme Court. So to play in the Supreme Court, let's say, ball field, you have to show standing. And that means in terms of did they have an injury that was a result of the defendant, in this case, the Food and Drug Administration, saying that the drug can be widely disseminated through the mail, through telemedicine. Did they prove injury that was traceable back to the conduct? Or, and was the court likely to act on this and to address whether or not the requested relief would help? And the Supreme Court said no, no, and no. The group bringing the suit doesn't have standing. Now, that doesn't mean that the Supreme Court ruled on any legal issues related to the distribution of the drug. What they ruled on, whether or not that the defendants, this Defending Freedom group, could go to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court could decide the legal issues. And the Supreme Court said, nope, our ball field is closed to you. Yeah, you didn't prove that you could have standing in this case.
So in other words, there may be a case, Professor, if somebody had a case that climbed up through the judiciary, hey, my daughter used this and died, or I used it and I have some permanent injury. That would be some sort of standing here if they wanted to go after the FDA, right?
Correct. You have to show injury. You have to show the injury was traceable back to the conduct and that the court ruling on it would actually help relief and provide some relief granted. Now, interestingly enough, Justice Roberts said, hey, you know, we're not going to hear your case. You're not allowed on our ball field. But, you know, there's still a regulatory process you can pursue. There's still, you know, a congressional legislative process, or you could just bring it to the political and electoral process. But it doesn't rise to the legal requirements to hear the legal issues in the Supreme Court.
So what, Professor?
So that's when you had a unanimous decision on these particular issues, given how polarized the court is. If they acted on the legal issues, you most likely would not have a unanimous decision.
Sure. So, Professor, and Professor Angela Matty is the guest from Quinnipiac. So, what is, if anything, what is the controversy here about this? Because from what I understand, please correct me, this is your area of expertise, not mine. This drug is not new. It's been used for a long time. It was approved by the FDA. What is, whether people agree with it or not, what is the debatable point here in this whole thing that some people are going after?
So the debatable point and the issues under review or contentious are whether or not the wider distribution of this drug should occur, you know, through the mail, through telemedicine. But, you know, if I take my legal policy hat off and I speak as a mother of a certain generation, this is reflective of the political views right now that are moving toward continuing to erode females' ability to have autonomy over their decisions for reproductive rights. And, you know, having been at the tail end of a generation that really fought for these rights and to have them slowly erode and to have a daughter who's of an age where it's important to her, you know, it's concerning. It's concerning how polarized the country is about these particular issues.
See, to me, Professor, and I'm generally a conservative on this show, but to me, I'm like, well, listen, if somebody wants, as long as this medication, and it's not to be toyed with, I understand that. It's, we know what it's for. But if somebody wants to use that and they are of legal age and they understand what it does, and they are using it of their free will. To me, it's a little, I don't know, incongruous here as to why there's a debate on this. And like I say, as long as there's some medical protocol here, or there is at least some regulatory agency watching this and just, you know, playing home monitor here. I mean, I even from a political point of view, I think we're going to see a day, Professor. I don't know about you, what you see the trends are. I just think we will eventually, it won't continuously end. There will still be some in-office abortions, but are more people using these medications or not? I think they are.
So, let me bring this discussion in two ways. First is, as you correctly identified, the oversight body is the Food and Drug Administration. We have probably the most efficacious, safest, effective review process than any other industrialized country.
Mm-hmm.
So the drug itself has been through the review process. It's obtained, you know, the ability to go to market, which is a big deal. So aside from it's marked within the safety parameters of the Food and Drug Administration, there's this whole political firestorm
mm-hmm.
around reproductive rights and women's autonomy around those reproductive rights. And you know, there's been a slow erosion of the ability for women, for females in this country, to have autonomy over decisions regarding reproductive rights. And, you know, it's basically drawn between two parties. You
yeah.
know, one
mm-hmm.
party feeling a certain way, the Republicans, that there needs to be a continued erosion of these rights, and the Democrats feeling that women should have the autonomy to make decisions. Now, being of my age and having a daughter of, you know, of a certain age, mm-hmm. being of my age and seeing what women in society went through to claim autonomy, you know, I sit there with my mouth open thinking, how did we end up moving back in time at this point? And, you know, as a mom who, you know, taught her daughter to be independent and autonomous
mm-hmm.
on all levels, how is it that my daughter is inheriting a society where people unrelated to her are making decisions about her reproductive rights? You know, it's it leaves me with my mouth open sometimes.
Yeah, And I mean, to me, Professor, and finally, you know, I look at this issue and, you know, if anything, it the use of these medications, again, as long as you say the FDA process is followed, and believe me, I've had some close relatives who've worked for a pharmaceutical company, so I know exactly what you're talking about, but, you know, with regulations and testing and different levels of testing and all this and how the regulatory matter works here. But, you know, beyond that, I mean, if you want to take this out of the political sphere, just give people their, you know, their own choice. Are there any other drugs? I know we always hear about mifepristone. Are there any other drugs that are in this class of medications that are seeing some controversy, or is this the big one or not?
So first, let me say, I'm not a clinician, so I'm not going to comment on other pharmaceutical meds,
mm-hmm.
only to say any drug that falls within this class falls within the political contentious environment
mm-hmm.
right now. So, and you know, I'm not advocating terminating pregnancies. What I'm advocating is the right for females to have autonomy
sure.
over their decision making regarding their reproductive rights
mm-hmm.
and their health care. And to, you know, be in this generation and just see it erode is, as I said, you know, it leaves me almost speechless.
Yeah, and again, you know, I don't think, Professor, you know, I don't think a lot of people are swayed, right? You're either on one side or the other. I mean, the screaming or the yelling on this is just, for me, even watching this and doing shows like this for 40 years, it's just, you know, I think we'd be better advocated to do other stuff here. Thanks once again. She's been on the show, Professor Angela Matte, an expert in health law and policy at Quinnipiac University, talking about the U.S. Supreme Court decision 9-0. Not really a decision, but saying 9-0, hey, this legal action doesn't belong here. At least there's no standing regarding the mifepristone. Professor, always good to have you on the air. Thank you.
Oh,
and we'll chat down the road, I am sure. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate Have a good day.
You too, Professor Angela Matte there. Let's see if our buddy, our pal Lenny Grimaldi, has any sympathy for anybody. Lenny, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing all right, Uncle Paulie. Life is good. You know, it's interesting about the tinted window.
Yeah.
So in reverse, a lot of police departments have them, right? And Chief Roderick Porter in Bridgeport, he's going to get rid of them.
Yeah.
Because he feels like it's a real disconnect between the public and the law enforcement officials, the department. Just feels like there's more of an openness if you don't have the tinted squad cars.
I know, I remember that, and I guess, but Lenny, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't I read where the union is pushing back, saying, hey, for certain areas, we don't want to have our heads showing because we could be shot at? Did they push back on that or not?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, there is some of that. So, well, we'll see how it shakes out. I mean, I'm not sure. I haven't examined the union contract and what it says about that. But I think right now, the last I heard, the chief is just going to move ahead with that. And they'll probably, they'll file a grievance and see how the process plays out.
Yeah. All right, Lenny, let's go to some of the juicy stuff. Of course, now it only took 5 years, but we have the four charges against four folks, one from Marilyn Moore's campaign, three from Joe Ganim's campaign, after 5 years. What do you think of this? And you did write a piece where, correct me if I'm wrong, you were kind of giggling and rolling your eyes a little bit from a journalistic point of view as to what Marilyn Moore said or not.
Yeah, some of the there's a lot of hypocrisy, coming from her because, a lot of her political operatives have done the same thing. In fact, in 2019, the person who led Marilyn Moore's absentee ballot operation when she was running for mayor was 1 year prior convicted of numerous felonies involving absentee ballots.
Jeez.
Right? So a bit of a hypocrisy there. But, looking at the affidavit, looking at all the information, Uncle Paulie, this case, these charges are thinner than Twiggy. I mean, this case...
That's what I thought, Lenny, when I read this. I said, geez, this is kind of anticlimactic, isn't it?
5 years later. Now, get a load of this. So I talked to a lot of first-class criminal defense attorneys. They're going to pick this thing apart. But get a load of this. 5 years later, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they charge people with alleged witness tampering for things allegedly said before there was a criminal investigation.
Mm.
So the criminal investigation doesn't start till a little over a year ago.
Yeah.
But basically, it's really strange how they could transport something that someone said years ago based on a newspaper article or a newspaper review, and the State Elections Enforcement Commission has civil authority, not criminal authority. They charged three of these people with quote unquote witness tampering, which is the most serious charge in this, but it's based on comments they made before there was a criminal investigation. So how does that come about? And then they said the dastardly thing of, don't say anything. So basically what the religion is, political operatives went to people they know and said, hey, if your absentee ballot is come in, give it to me, I'll drop it off, or I'll mail it, or whatever. You're not supposed to touch it unless you're a family member. Because very restrictive rules in the state of Tennessee, who could touch an absentee ballot. We've talked about it. In a lot of states, it's legal. But in Connecticut, it's very, very, very restrictive. So they drop this stuff in. And I think, and of course it's Bridgeport, right? And so we have the statewide media that's up in a frenzy. I think this is only as a result of, a lot of, media frenzy that the state said, we we have to do something, but I think it's a real reach.
Well, you know, it's funny you mention that, Lenny, or maybe not, because somebody in the building here at Connoisseur came up to me. I'm not going to say who, but we were talking about this over the coffee machine, and this person said, hey, do you think these charges finally came up because the 2023 thing is allegedly there? And, Lenny, could there have been a scenario of, well, these might be kind of flimsy or wafer-thin charges, but, you know, Jesus H., you did it again. You know, like so if we're going to get you for 2023, we're certainly going to charge you for 2019. Any of that going on here, do you think, or not?
Well, I think there's part of that. It's part of the frenzy. But with this case is from 2019, there's still cameras, right? So it's a lot of he said, she yeah. said things. But here's a really important point. Historically, let's forget 2023, because that's in film. It's a very different standard, right? But in this case, these types of cases historically have always been settled civilly
yeah.
with the State Elections Enforcement Commission. They have not referred these things criminally. This is, they just like would say, okay, you know, let's do a consent decree for a $200 fine,
okay.
and it's done, it's over with. And that's how historically these cases have been handled. But I do think there's part of the frenzy of 2023. There was an investigation going on, but 5 years later, come on. I mean, it's like, and I think a lot of people are going to be disappointed in how this case is disposed of.
Yeah.
Because there's some, you know, Bob Goulash was a first-class criminal defense attorney. He's representing one of the defendants in this thing. I think he's just going to pick this thing apart. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Interesting. Couple of more things here before our weekly Trump dump. Ernie Newton. Well, he survives and Ernie moves on, right?
Yeah, Moses and his staff live to fight another day.
We're parting. What body of water has parted for Ernie here in Bridgeport?
The Pequannock River.
Pequannock River, yeah.
Goes right through the heart of the district of the 23rd Senatorial.
Yeah,
right, splits
yeah.
it right in half. So Ernie Newton, he's signatured his way onto the ballot. It's August 13th. We're 2 months away, right?
Mm.
2 months away from that primary. And so he's going to be a freshman incumbent, Heron Gaston, who we talked about it last week, you know, who got riled up because the state made a mistake and admitted to it. They gave Newton a couple of extra weeks to secure the signatures. Normally the standard is 2 weeks,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
But they cited an old statute that allowed for 4 weeks.
Oh.
So the Newton campaign had more time. He might not have gotten there with just the 2 weeks. But nevertheless, Gaston had threatened to run into court. I've been trying to reach him the last couple of days. I haven't been able to reach him. So he may be pulling back on that. I'm not really sure. It's still, you know, it's still advantage Gaston because he's the incumbent and he's going to outspend Newton at least 2-1.
Wow.
But Newton says, listen, I don't need as much money because I have more net. I have.
Oh,
a lot
sure.
of name.
Who doesn't know him?
Yeah, I know. It's hot. No, absolutely. You know,
yeah,
the Moses of the. What you're gonna say, you know?
Yeah. Love him or hate him, yeah. Good news. A Residence Inn by Marriott coming to Steel Point. What's up with that?
Yeah, we have a place to stay when they throw us out. That's pretty good. So there's a lot of work going on at the Steel Point redevelopment area with luxury housing and workforce housing. You know, that's under construction right now. So mm-hmm. adjacent to it, nearby to it, construction is going to start in 2025 for a Residence Inn by Marriott. And the developer there, Robert Christoph Jr., inked his deal, recently there. So I think there's going to be probably about 125, 130
units
over there.
Nice.
And Bridgeport needs it because the state's largest city has been out without a hotel for, you know, over 2 years now.
Wow.
So the old Holiday Inn has been converted into housing downtown. You have a lot of housing going on in downtown Bridgeport. And as we talked about it, once these units, housing units are you know, go vertical, the Steve Point redevelopment area, is going to be transformational for Bridgeport.
Excellent. And about the minute we have left, Lenny, your old boss, Mr. Trump, back on Capitol Hill, making nice and nice, a schmooze with the Republicans there. Lenny, at least the conviction, we don't know whether he's going to jail, but his poll numbers really haven't moved all that much, as a lot of people thought.
Yeah, and I think, again, we talked about it last week, if he gets jail time, that could change it. But I actually think my former boss had a bad week because he didn't want to see Hunter Biden be convicted.
Yeah.
He wanted Hunter Biden to be acquitted because the conviction of Biden undercuts his message of a rigged system, right? And so they were planning to raise a lot of money off this thing. So he really didn't want Hunter Biden to be convicted.
Oh, never. There you go. It never ends, Lenny. Lenny Grimaldi is the guy. Only in Bridgeport.com is the site. Lenny, thank you. Have a great weekend. We'll talk next week.
See you next week. Thanks,
Lenny.